What I want to tell you is that if the experience, the predominant experience that you're having is not joy in your life, please seek out somebody that can help you find that. I believe it is our birthright and we are meant to be in that experience almost exclusively starting now, not when we get the thing. And so if it's not me, if it's not this podcast, then keep looking. There is a someone out there to help you find purpose and meaning and joy in your life today. You need not wait any longer, and you deserve it.
Do you need encouragement to turn tragedies into your own triumphant life story? If so, this podcast is for you. Listen to powerful guests who have persevered through challenges so you can gain strength to build your championship life. The host of Professor of Perseverance Podcast, Dr. James Perdue.
Welcome back to the Professor of Perseverance Podcast. I am who you would call the Professor of Perseverance, Dr. James Perdue. Hey, thank y'all for being here. Thank you for coming in. Hey, you know, this show couldn't last or be without you. And I want to personally thank each and every one that comes in and listens, whether it's live, whether you're coming in on a replay, wherever you come back on multiple replays and sharing it out to your friends or people you know that could use this assistance. Today's guest, boy, she had an anxiety disorder that basically, let's just go ahead and say it. She was imprisoned in her own home. The anxiety just kept her not wanting to get out, and she just basically imprisoned herself with it. And another thing, boy, this would be tough if this really would happen, but she said had an accident that nearly killed someone. Boy, that would be tough because I actually know someone, and they did accidentally kill someone. I mean, they were found guilty of anything. It was an accident. But, man, I don't know how I'd get through with that one. And divorce. I mean, divorce is hard. You don't have to go anywhere to know that. But our guest today is Erin McCullough, and she helps people create impeccable, I know I didn't say that exactly right, impeccable joy so they can be calm, have peace of mind, meaning in their life. Erin, welcome to the Professor of Perseverance Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
We're thrilled to have you here. Hey, we already have Nancy here. She says she has made it. She's here, ready to get fired up, get educated, get inspired, get motivated, learn to get joy in her life. So, Erin, again, how are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I hope that we're doing what we can. Like I said a minute ago, I'm doing all right for the next day or two, and I'll reevaluate after that. So, getting all ready for the 4th of July and everything like that. So, I hope y'all having good weather and going to be able to celebrate it as well.
Yeah, we're having good weather. We had a lot of dry, like super hot heat, so they banned fireworks, but we'll still make it good.
We'll make it good. Just get online and watch everybody else's fireworks.
Right.
Then you don't have to worry about burning your house down or anything like that.
That's right. Starting forest fires.
That's right. Yeah, in your area where you're living, yeah, you already have enough trouble with fires this time of the year. You don't need any help with the 4th of July, that's for sure.
Definitely not.
So, all right, Erin, let's go and get to your story about this anxiety disorder. And I know you said it helped you up pretty much for a year at your home. I just want to substitute it, you know, basically imprison yourself, you know, with this anxiety disorder to stay at home. And so if you want to go ahead to, and then briefly with the near to killing one, and of course, we all know how divorce is. It goes as well or as bad as people dictate.
That's right.
So
it all started for me in, of all places, a couples counseling session. I was with a boyfriend of mine at the time, and we had decided we wanted to get some professional help. And in that first meeting with the counselor, I had a panic attack, and I'd never had one before, so I didn't know what it was. And the counselor explained what it was and asked if I want to do some individual counseling. And through that individual counseling is how I created my anxiety disorder. And I say I created it because I understand now that how powerful we are and how powerful the mind is and how we can create these things, you know, without, there's no blame or fault here. Just, I didn't know, you know? And so what happened was I had that first panic attack, and then I started having them often, more often, all the time. And you can imagine when you start to have panic attacks and you're doing the regular things you do in your life, you start to go, maybe I can't do this thing anymore. Maybe I can't run anymore. Maybe I can't work anymore. And so it just was like that. It was slowly like, oh, I guess I can't do this thing anymore. Now I can't do this other thing anymore. So I say that because these things happen gradually. It's not like all of a sudden I was like, no, I can't go out of the house. It was like little by little, I narrowed my life. And I recognize now that how the anxiety disorder was created was through telling traumatic stories about my life over and over again. And it became very Pavlovian, the counseling sessions, because it was like, I knew what I was to expect. And so every time I would get to the office, I would immediately start crying. And so it was like the cycle of things. Oh, I'm going to talk about the story again. And oh, it was so awful. And so about 8 or 9 months into that whole thing, my counselor referred me to a homeopathic psychiatrist who interviewed me for 3 hours, gave me a remedy, asked me to wait 20 minutes and leave. And after that 20 minutes, my anxiety was gone, or the experience of anxiety was gone. Now, that didn't navigate the mental, emotional, spiritual piece of anxiety. And so I want to let people know there's not a quick fix to these sorts of things. It comes through all parts being equal in my estimation, which is mind, body, and spirit. And when you have all those balanced, then you can create healing. But so I had the chemistry piece figured out, but I didn't have the mental, emotional, spiritual piece. And so what I did was I recreated it again. So I thought from there, I went, oh my gosh, I might actually have a life here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to move to a small town in Hawaii, paradise, you know, and then it will never happen again. Lo and behold, I was still there. I hadn't done the healing. And so I created it over and over again, this anxiety, the stress, the overwhelm. And when I moved to the town, I started a business immediately. It took off like gangbusters. And so you can imagine stress and anxiety and all the things. And then about 10 years in, I had a client call, complain, and I would take these complaints so seriously. They were personal to me, and I just would get frantic. So I raced over to a friend's house to drop my daughter off, and I sideswiped my car in her driveway on her husband's truck. And I dropped my daughter. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. There was no damage to his truck. So I left, and I came back, and my friend said, you know, I need to tell you something. When you hit my husband's truck, he was under it working on it on stilts, and he thought it was going to fall on him and kill him. And I thought, wow, like this is not okay being this way in this life. Like this is not a way to live. So then I delved into self-development and going to seminars and reading books and recognizing there was a different way to do this life. I was starting to enact some things, not having a whole lot of results, but feeling better, at least like there was another way. And then I found myself in a divorce that just leveled me. And I recognized in that process of feeling like being in that dark place that I didn't have any actual strategies to getting out of this place. And a series of things happened. I picked up the book, A Course in Miracles. I don't know if you've ever heard of this book. It's meant to be a year-long journey, 365 passages. And I was about a month in and I was like, this is interesting, but it's not really moving the needle. And then month two, something very strange happened. I started to look at the passage each day and these words were like, this word kept popping up off the page. It was, the path is joy. The answer is joy. Just like joy, joy, joy. And I thought, what is, I mean, I get it. I hear you. It's joy. Yeah, yeah. Of course it's joy. But I couldn't figure out how to get there. And then I got an email from a gentleman that I had known through another seminar company. He had a seminar coming up. I bought it sight unseen and I went, and it was a day long seminar on a visualization process that he teaches. And so I went home very excited about it. And I started enacting this visualization and all of the things lined up in my life. First of all, I found my joy through that visualization. If you had asked me prior to that, I wouldn't have even known what joy exactly was. But I found my joy in the visualization. I found my purpose by going back and training with him and standing in front of my first seminar teaching teaching people how to find joy and cultivate it daily so they can have that experience predominantly. And then I had this business that was first my business that was for sale for 9 months that with no bites. I came home from that seminar and told my broker, just want to let you know my business is going to sell by the end of the month and there's going to be a bidding war. And lo and behold, a week later that happened. And so through that process, I went, here's the sweet spot. Here's the things. And so I've been teaching that for the last 4 years.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you wouldn't have really known what joy was if it wasn't for all this, you know, other than the definition that they give you in the dictionary. So, but that's a lot like a lot of things in life until we really experience it and wake up to realize and accept to move on, whatever it is. We really don't understand and know it. We tell people we know what happiness is. I know what happiness is, but until they really find it and experience it, they really don't. I mean, they're fooling themselves, they're fooling other people, but until they finally get it, then, man, it just seems like everything falls in place then.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, I like to talk about, so for me, happiness and joy are actually two different things. They have mm-hmm. some of the same qualities, but happiness to me is based on external things. It's like, I got the new car, woohoo. It's very exciting, you know, jump up and down. But eventually it's just a car. It just gets you from A to B, you know. And joy, however, is the internal journey and it has the exuberance, has the excitement and the, you know, jumping up and down piece, but it has all these other nuances that are so profound for me, like calm and stillness. And peace of mind, that's the not mind racing stuff that used to go on all the time for me. And those nuances can be cultivated daily so that you can experience this life now in this present moment in such a lovely, beautiful place. And, you know, that happiness piece is for me, that was kind of, you know, how I lived my life before. It was like, oh, I need to go after, I need my business to be successful. I need my life to be successful on some level. I have to have all these goals. I have to chase all this stuff. And now I'm really more into this idea of sufficiency. Like where I'm at is enough. Do I want other things? Of course. Yeah. Lovely. Like have aspirations for other things. But when we live in the state of sufficiency that right now, I do have enough, then the pressure's off. There's true freedom in that.
Yeah, when you're chasing your dream can be frustrating because having to wait on the timing, wait on everything to fall in place. Like you said, setting up goals, reaching a goal, reaching another goal, not reaching a goal, it can be frustrating through all that. But again, like you're saying, if I live in the now, accept what I do have, blessed what I have, and then, hey, there's nothing wrong with wanting more to do better, to do more. Nothing wrong with that. But I'm like you. You've got to find the joy within yourself to know this is as good as it gets, then I'm great. If I can do better to help out me and help out other people, that's even better. And I would like people to go to Beverly Hillbillies and Google and look up and listen to Granny from the Beverly Hillbillies singing, "She has joy, joy, joy down in her heart." So that song will help you explain when she talks about the joy that's within inside Granny singing down in her heart on the Beverly Hillbillies. I'm older than you, so you may not have seen the Beverly Hillbillies, but
of course I have, yeah.
But there's a scene where she's singing, she's got joy, joy, joy down in her heart. So, all right, let's see, Nancy. Well, all right, Aaron. So let's go into give a couple of examples, a couple of your steps or whatnot on how people can help find this joy or get this joy, retrieve this joy?
Yeah, so the process that I take people through is what I call impenetrable joy. And the reason that I call it that is because it's the idea that you can no longer be beholden or at the mercy of people or circumstances to dictate whether you are having a good day or a bad day, or for that matter, a good or bad life. And, you know, often, or at least for myself, and I feel like there's a lot of people maybe out there that have that same experience, that I thought I was, you know, every experience. I thought I was, you know, I had this experience that I was, you know, on this roller coaster ride of events, you know, is like, oh, this person just came in and there's some sort of crisis, so now I've got to fix that. And it was just this, you know, always in reaction to people and circumstances not showing up how I wanted them to, or, you know, being in some sort of crisis. And, you know, when you're running a business with lots of people involved and all of that, you have that experience all the time. And I didn't, it wasn't until I read this book called A New Earth that I recognized that we aren't our thoughts and we're not our emotions. And how you know this is that you can have a thought, you can have an emotion, you can name that thought or that emotion. So who is that that's the namer? Who is that that's the spectator of that? That's actually who you are. And so when you can create separateness between the idea that you are your thoughts or your emotions and the fact that you are the spectator of those things, then you start to realize you actually can be empowered to change the thoughts and the emotions at will. And when you recognize that, then it's a game changer, because you now are no longer beholden to the circumstance or the person that said something that triggered you. You get to decide from that moment moving forward. Ah, then the other piece I like to teach is this idea of personal responsibility, where, you know, rather than, I don't know about you, but for me, I was sort of taught to sort of be the victim, right? That person said this and now I'm angry, right? Taking personal responsibility is about saying, oh, that person said this, I am angry. I wonder why I'm angry. They didn't make me feel angry. I'm angry. So whatever they said triggered anger in me.
Yeah, I choose to be that way because of the outside predicament.
Influencer, yeah.
Influence, yes. So, yeah.
Yeah, so it's the recognizing that you get to decide how you're going to respond versus react to everybody and everything. Like, you get to keep going in. Like, the journey is in. All this stuff out here is not real, really. It's all neutral. We decide all the things about it, right? We decide whether, you know, people or situations are good or bad, right or wrong. Like, that's us. The situations themselves are just neutral. We're the ones that are making up the story about it being right or wrong or good or bad.
It's amazing that we are the captains of our own ship of life, the master of plan, but yet we allow other people to destroy us. Because we worry too much what other people think, too much what they're going to say. Get out of their business. Forget them. I mean, if they're talking bad about you, you don't need to be around them in the first place. And I don't know who said this, but it's exactly right. I don't care how good you are. I don't care how much you help people. I don't care all the joy and everything you're trying to spread in life. You're going to be the evil person in somebody else's story and their life just because they're that way already. And they're jealous of you. They don't believe in you, whatever it is. But get that outside influence, like you said, get them away from you. Don't mess with them. Don't let them dictate your life. Set your own dream life to live.
Yeah, and this comes from, you know, it starts at a young age where we are looking for validation externally, right? So good job, honey, you know, great goal, great, you know, congratulations, you graduated, you know, all the things, you know, good job on that A or whatever the thing is versus, and this was a game changer for me. I learned this from, I was watching a parenting webinar, and she said, if you want to create self-esteem for your kids, rather than telling them good job or, you know, nice job on that thing or whatever, what you want to say is, how do you feel about that goal that you just made or that A that you just brought home or the, you know, certificate that you just got? Yeah. And I went, like the light bulb went on. I went, yes. Yes. Like that is how you create self-esteem, is you ask yourself. Now you know, maybe you didn't have that experience. You're an adult now. You didn't have that experience, but you can create that experience for yourself now, rather than, you know, every time you're thinking, oh, that would be embarrassing, or, you know, somebody might have a response to that or whatever. You just go inside and you say, how does that make me feel? And when we keep going towards the things that make us feel good, then we don't worry about what's going on for other people outside of ourselves. It's not of interest anymore. Like, we're so focused on ourselves that it doesn't matter what's happening for other people.
Yep. And I'm all for, again, I'm not saying kick people out of your life forever. I mean, I've known this one boy for 40 years, but there's things that I don't want to hear. I don't want you negative. I don't want you, you know, keep that to yourself. And when he starts, hey, dude, have a good day. And then I'll leave him alone for a month, you know. But I'm not saying you got to kick everybody out of life forever. But you can let them know, you know, I'm just not that way, you know, and say, I'm not trying to change you, but so don't try to change me, you know, and things like that. And I like what you mentioned here about asking whatever is, how do you feel about the outcome, instead of just pushing it on to them. Good job. Hey, way to go. And you don't have to say a whole lot when it's bad, because they're already feeling bad anyway. But they realize it. You realize it. But again, even when something bad is, how do you feel about it? Let them open, express it as well. Because, I mean, they know it as well as you do. And so there's no need bullying up, not bullying, but pinning them up with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we certainly do get enough negative influence in our lives. But I think that we can shape. So, you know, we all know that there is, you know, nonverbal communication that goes on between humans. And, you know, when you do exercises like, you know, with your friend and they talk about negative things or whatever, you know, versus, you know, cutting them out of your life, one of the techniques that I teach people is, when they say the negative thing, then you say something positive. And what happens subconsciously for that person is, their subconscious says, oh, that person doesn't want to talk about those things anymore. So then they stop talking about those things. So rather
That's a good point. That's good.
Yeah. So I use the, you know, the average Joe's like, oh, hi, honey, I'm home, you know, from work. How was your day? You know, normally we talk about all the things that aren't working out, right? Oh, I sat in traffic and then this coworker and that and this, right? And so what I tell my clients to do, if you want to reshape those conversations, is you listen to that and then you change the subject. And they may go back to it and then you change the subject. And then their subconscious, totally unawares, will stop talking about those things, because you're shaping their behavior by saying, oh, we don't want to talk about those things anymore.
So they're going to talk about the positive, or they're not going to talk at all, right?
Right. So it's, you don't ever, because the other thing that we like to do is, somebody comes in, oh, my day, you know, traffic and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, yeah, me too. Oh, yeah, me too. And so that just fuels the fire. When we stop talking, let them finish, and then reshape the conversation, it becomes a different conversation. The other thing I like to say about that is, you know, we've been taught, you know, the same thing too, which is talk about the things that aren't working out. But when we focus on all the things that are working out, which are like thousands and thousands, millions even of things that are working out versus the maybe handful of things that are not working out, it reshapes how we see this world too. And that's a practice. It doesn't feel all that great at first. It feels very awkward and weird because we're used to complaining about stuff. When we stop complaining and start looking at, you know, I mean, I call it radical gratitude. You get up in the morning and it's like, thank you for this bed. Thank you for the pillow. Thank you for the covers. Thank you for running water and this lovely coffee I'm about to drink. You know, all the things that we take for granted, which would suck if we didn't have them, you know, like it would suck if we didn't have running water. It would be awful if we didn't have heat or air conditioning or, you know, covers to make ourselves warm or just a shelter over our head. It would be awful if we didn't have those things. So how come we don't like build those parts up and go, wow, look how abundant I am that I have all these things in my life on a regular basis. And even if you are homeless, like I've met plenty of homeless people that are grateful for what they have. Thank you for that dollar you just gave me. I'm going to go buy something to eat. I'm going to, you know, go buy some newspapers that I could sell to even get more food to eat. I mean, you know, there is always something that we can thank you for that tree. Thank you for this beautiful nature. You know, thank you for the people that love me. There's just so much to be grateful for. And we're concentrating on these like five things that aren't working out. It's nonsensical, but it's how we're taught to think.
That goes back to what you're just saying. I met a man and I call him my mentor. Again, I tell people he doesn't know he's my mentor, but his name is W. Mitchell. I mentioned him multiple times, but in the late 60s, he was riding a motorcycle, got hit by a vehicle. His motorcycle caught on fire. He got 60% of his body burnt. Face, yeah. Lost his fingers, thumb, just had mittens, basically, palms, 60% of his body. But after all the skin grafts, 4 or 5 years later, he's learning to fly them little planes, and he comes in and lands. And when he landed, the plane kind of bounced. And the other people got out of the plane, no deal, big deal or anything, just got down out. He went to get out. And when it bounced, it broke his back. All right. So now, not only did he become paralyzed after being 60% burnt, his motto, his theme in life, his biggest quote that I tell people, he says, I used to be able to do 10,000 things, but now I can only do 9,000. I don't focus on the 1,000 I can't do, focus on the 9,000 I can do. And like you said, we want to complain about what we don't have. And I tell people, I try not to complain anymore because nobody wants to listen to it anymore. And which is good for me. That makes me stay focused on the positive and like that. But yeah. Like you're just saying, why aren't we grateful for what we have? I've been blessed enough to go over to Africa, Comoro Islands, and seen how people are living without running water and stuff like that. I believe we ought to take a 2 week to a month trip to a third world country and live there and then come back and feel how blessed and grateful you really are.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we're so much more alike than we're different. I feel like we spend a lot of time, you know, making these differences. And I want to say, you know, when it comes down to it, every human through all the travels that I've done, every human that I've met really wants the same thing, to love and be loved. And that's it. I mean, yes. Ultimately, when you distill it down, it is like, I want to love people in a meaningful way and I want to be loved in a meaningful way.
Nancy's doing, bringing up here, joy of Jesus.
Nice.
Joy of Jesus. All right. And she also mentioned this, and this is a good question. She didn't actually put it as a question, but I'm going to. How much quiet time or meditation or praying do do you think someone ought to have, or should they have, to help them slow their brain down and think and get out of the now of what's happening, what's going on? I mean, do you think they should not?
Absolutely. I think that everyone should start their day with a practice. My practice looks like a meditation visualization. Then I read or listen to something that speaks to me on a deep level, speaks to my soul, like makes me contemplate like why we're here and what we're meant to be doing. And, you know, meditation is phenomenal for so many different, I mean, like physiological things, you know, slowing the heart down and calm and all those things, but also this peace of mind piece, which peace of mind to me is the stopping of, you know, all of those, you know, rampant thoughts that will just take over your life. Like most of us are living in our thoughts versus living in this moment. And, you know, like the example I usually give is like, do you remember driving to work? You drive there every single day or 5 days a week. How many times do you get to work and you can recall every little thing that happened along the way? Like never, right? Because you know that route. You're not even, you're completely in thought. And the other piece is, you know, this thought, this the rampant thoughts really typically about pulling from the past and projecting into the future what we think is going to happen, you know, and that's where worry and anxiety and overwhelm and stress come from, going, oh my gosh, this thing happened. Now let me think it to death so I can come up with a solution for this outcome that I want. And the outcome, like 99% of the time, doesn't happen. So it's literally just kind of a waste of time. And meditation, the purpose of meditation is to quiet the mind, is to be still and quiet and have no thought, be of no mind. And for me, it took years to get to that place because my mind was off to the races. As soon as you give me like any moment to like sit still for a minute, I'm off to the races thinking about to-do lists and how am I going to fix this? And so it took a while. And I like to tell people that have that experience, don't give up on meditation. Meditation, for me, how it finally sort of worked itself out was by using a mantra. And using that mantra, it could be anything, could be joy, could be any word that speaks to you that's positive, or you could do a Sanskrit word like om or whatever. But the idea is, you know, I like to put on a little bit of music, nice music that doesn't have words. And then I have this mantra. I don't need to do it anymore, but in the beginning I did. And then every time I notice I'm getting into thought again, then I go back to the word. So then I say the word over and over and over again. And then I went, oh, off to the races with the thoughts, back to the word, right? And then in that, you're training your brain to stop thinking, shut down. And eventually you won't need the mantra. Eventually you'll recognize, oh, I did start with the mantra, but then it was just quiet. And it's not that every thought is bad. You know, some thoughts are like, you know, got to feed the dog. Like that's not a bad thought. There's no energy on that thought, but there are the other thoughts that are not so great. And so those are the ones that we want to calm the mind and rid ourselves of, at least for that moment in time.
Yeah. I like to tell people that as soon as they recognize that negative thought, now, like I said, some thoughts are not bad. It's not necessarily eventful, not necessarily going to change your lifestyle, like I said, feeding the dog. But I tell people when you first recognize that negative thought, slam it shut like a mouse trap and try to come up with something positive and try to focus on that. I mean, we're born with a negative attitude. I mean, we are taught from a baby that if we cry, I'll get my diaper changed. If I cry, they're going to feed me. If I cry, they're going to hold me. If I cry, they're going to make me as comfortable as possible. And so we've got to break that as we get older. I mean, if not, we're going to whine and cry all of our life to hope that people are going to give us stuff instead of growing, maturing, getting what we want, we need, and then use. And I'm a big believer, use something to help other people.
I agree. And I think we're all here. I think we all have our own unique purpose for being here that is based on our history, our experiences. And that's where we find purpose and meaning, is when we recognize, ah, here's the sweet spot that I'm really good at, you know, because of my experience. And I encourage everybody to look for that thing. You know, it's not about making all the money and collecting all, amassing stuff. It's about fully being in our purpose and enjoying our day to day, like every single day. You know, we've sort of been taught to put everything off until we have the, until I have that right job, until I have that promotion, until I have that stack of cash, until I have that car or house or relationship or fill in the blank for anything. And that's unfortunately a wasted life, because
how many times, Aaron, sorry to interrupt you, but how many times when I have that house, then I can move forward to be able to, then when the house gets here, well, now, and until I can get that, for me, a wife, then I'm not going to, and then it's children. And then, like you said, instead of living in now to have that joy and stuff like that in life, if you're basing it on what you have to have in the future is never going to come, because once you get whatever, then you're going to find something else that you have to have to be based on to get whatever.
Exactly. 100%. Yeah. Also, the thing I wanted to say is, you know, I do love the switching to the positive idea. I sort of insert a step prior to that, and that is to allow yourself to feel the emotion. I think there's been this movement about positivity, which I love. You know, of course, I'm all about positivity, except that I feel like it's become another Band-Aid in terms of, like, you know, don't allow yourself to feel the feeling, just slap a Band-Aid on it of, you know, well, I'm so blessed, I can't complain. And yeah, and while that's true, yes, yes. But the thing is, I think from a young age, we've been taught not to feel our emotions on a deeper level. You know, not the crying when you're little and you need your diaper changed, but the, you know, it's when you get older and you're running and you skin your knee and it's like, it's okay, honey, don't cry. Like, we have this suppression of emotions that happens from a very young age. And in my estimation, the only way to heal these wounds and to heal and grow as a human is to experience these emotions. And we've tamped them down for a very long time. And in that tamping down, then we can't fully express ourselves as humans. And so for me, that process of healing is definitely about, you know, awareness, which usually comes in the form of crisis. And then there's emotional awareness, which is like, oh, I'm angry right now, or I'm sad, or I'm stressed out. And recognizing these patterns of behavior that we have and feeling the emotion, like seeing where it lives in your body, understanding what triggers the emotion, like what were the thoughts before it? What are the thoughts once I have the experience? Becoming that detective of your life and then going, ah, I can enact some sort of strategy now so I don't have to go down that rabbit hole every single time. I can feel the emotions and then be done with it, you know, instead of tamping it down, putting a Band-Aid on it and trying to move on. You know, the obvious things are like drugs and alcohol that we use to like not feel the things, but there's so many, like we literally are constantly trying not to feel our emotions through all kinds, you know, gambling, sex, social media, helicopter parenting, putting everybody before ourselves, workaholism, you know, constantly working or not being able to sit still, being so super busy that we don't even schedule in stillness or, you know, time for yourself or even your family. And, you know, all these things that we just have to do, those are those things that we're band-aiding up all these emotions. And I say, feel all those emotions and then move on. I mean, don't wallow in them. I'm not saying that.
No. I understand. And as you're saying that, it makes great sense to me. But it makes me think, makes me just wonder in what you're saying. I mean, about recognizing and feeling the emotions, if that may be some of the problem today, where people are bottling up that emotions and everything, and then finally they're so full, the cork is busting out of the champagne bottle, and then they're, boom, you know, they're so mad at everybody and whatever else, because they bottled it up without recognizing and feeling. Like you said, I wonder if that's playing a part in life like that. I wonder.
Oh, my
I mean, because when I was younger, you talk about falling down. Yeah, we'd fall down, do something. They say, I'll just rub some dirt on it, get out there and go play some more. You know, but as you're saying that, recognize and feel the emotion, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm just wondering if people are bottling it up nowadays so much until, again, the cork just bust out of the bottle and they're spraying the champagne all over the place. Because not understanding what's going on and not using it properly, the emotions properly.
That's exactly what's going on. Yeah, I mean, just look at, I don't know about where you're at, but in traffic here, people are losing their, flipping their lid all over the place, honking and cussing and flipping people off. And I mean, it's one thing to use your horn to say, excuse me, please don't hit me. But to lay on your horn, that's somebody who has latent anger because they haven't been able to express their emotions. And this is where compassion comes in. It's like, okay, I haven't been compassionate enough with myself to allow myself to feel all the emotions, and the same for everybody else. And so, you know, in traffic, like just in regular driving around town, it's like crazy the amount of anger you see over all the things, you know, and it's like, oh, wow, that's just under the surface because it's just the last thing. You know what I mean? Like, and it's acceptable. It's acceptable to lay on your horn and cuss somebody out and give them a dirty look, do all the things. And it's just another sign that we're not allowing ourselves the compassion to feel the feelings of the actual thing, right? It's not about, you know, it's not about the guy who's stuck in the middle of the intersection when the light turns red and screwing it up for everybody else. It's not about that. That's just a representation of something deeper. There's some deeper anger. There's some unexpressed anger that is being triggered by that experience.
Well, that's finally their release point.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the,
it's a buildup of everything from whatever, like you just said, and they finally hit that release point and it's over with. So,
well, and it's an acceptable way to express yourself in our society, unfortunately,
today.
Versus like in the boardroom, you know, you can't flip your lid in the boardroom because that would be unprofessional. And so you bottle it up there and then you get in the car and then you flip everybody off on the way home.
One of your colleagues or your boss comes out to your car and you go, man, how come your steering wheel is all bent to crap right here? Driving on. So, Aaron, again, hey, thank you for coming on. We're going to cut this here, but you've given some valuable information about, again, recognizing and feeling your emotions. And I'm a really big, thinking of that. And talking about the meditation. Let me go back to this meditation for a minute. How would one get started? Say 2 minutes at a time, build up to 5 minutes. I mean, I know you're not going to say, oh, just jump in there and go for the first hour and see what you get out of it.
No,
how would you help someone if they wanted to start a program like that?
You know, one of the things that I often refer people to is Oprah Winfrey and Deepak Chopra do a 21-day free meditation that I think is beautiful. It's 15 to 20 minutes long, but the first 5 or so minutes are Oprah talk. It's subject related, all different kinds of subjects. And, you know, Oprah will say a thing and then Deepak will say a thing and then he'll give a mantra and what that mantra means and all things. So in total, you end about 10 to 12 minutes. And then he'll, you know, ring the bell and you start your meditation with the music and everything. So you're just thinking mantra, mantra, mantra. Oh, there's thoughts, mantra, mantra. And then the bell rings again. And then, you know, he says something else and then it's done. if you feel like something like that is not for you, I would say, you know, try 5 minutes. You know, 5 minutes is a long time to not be in thought, especially for somebody who's not used to not thinking, which is everybody.
Yes.
So, you know, what I just want to affirm is it is challenging at first, and it will be just mantra, thought, mantra, thought, mantra. Just, and it'll get better. It's just like going to gym, can't, you know, lift one weight and be buff all of a sudden. So yeah, do the, you know, you do it enough so that you create a practice out of it.
It's going to take more than 3 days to get this pattern down, this behavior down. So what do they say? What, 17 or 21 days can change behavior. So maybe longer than 21 days. And so, yeah, give it a shot. See what happens. Worst thing that happens is it doesn't work. But give it a shot. You won't know until you try it. So you got Nancy on board with you. She is agreeing about people with their emotions and everything like that, and not holding, shouting correctly, and from there. So, all right, Aaron, thank you for being here. Hey, go ahead and tell everybody how we can get a hold of you in case someone would like to book you, find you, get part of your course, part of your clientele.
Yeah, so I want to say that I always give away a free call, a 20-minute call that just, I love to just talk to people. If there's any kind of wisdom I can impart on, you know, part of my journey, if it speaks to you, you can find that. So Instagram's probably the best way to get me. It's my handle is Erin, ErinMacLLC. And I post a video a week with strategies and things to think about. And then my website URL is in the profile.
And I'll link stuff down in the description as well to make it easier to anybody, whether you're on YouTube and click in or find a podcast somewhere and then go to the notes and you can click it and go from there. Aaron, thanks for being here. You gave some valuable information. I know you got Nancy and me all fired up, ready to start meditation and feeling our emotions more. So if you can do one more thing for us, we know that people are struggling outside. We know they're hurting. If you can give a powerful message to help them get through today, that would be awesome.
What I want to tell you is that if the experience, the predominant experience that you're having is not joy in your life, please seek out somebody that can help you find that. I believe it is our birthright and we are meant to be in that experience almost exclusively starting now, not when we get the thing. And so if it's not me, if it's not this podcast, then keep looking. There is a someone out there to help you find purpose and meaning and joy in your life today. You need not wait any longer, and you deserve it.
Amen. We do deserve joy in our life, and then we can spread joy to help the other person in life. I agree, but we're here for a reason. It's not for ourselves. It's to help one another and find that purpose that we can do something for someone. So, all right, Aaron, again, thank you for being here. Everyone else, thank you for coming in, even on the replay. If you know someone needs some joy, some pick-me-up, boom, share this to them as well. So, all right, everybody else, do something today, tomorrow, something next week that's going to help you persevere past your paralysis.
Thanks for listening to the Professor of Perseverance podcast for motivation, inspiration, and encouragement. For more information, go to Facebook at Professor of Perseverance. Visit the website at professorofperseverance.com and view the YouTube channel, Dr. James Perdue, Professor of Perseverance.